In Total War, Shogun II conquered 16th century Japan by leading massive samurai armies and fleets of warships into sweeping real-time battle. 10 warlords strive for supremacy, but only one will become Shogun. Download the Total War Shogun 2 demo today on Steam.
It's Thursday, it's March 10th, it's 2011, and this is the PC Gamer Podcast number 263. Stick around at the end of the podcast to hear Josh interview Eskil Steenberg, creator of the MMO Love, as he explains why games should focus less on graphics and more on inspiring emotions. I'm your host, Evan Lottie, Senior Hamburger for PC Gamer Magazine, and joining me today are Logan Decker, EIC of PC Gamer and wearer of the Totoro Crown.
How do you do?
Also have to my left, Joshua Blogostine Augustine, associate editor.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, left-hand man right here.
Across from me to my northwest, Chris Comiskey, PC Gamer Word Police.
Affirmative.
And introducing energy drink test subject 504A, Anthony Valva.
Anthony's back, baby.
A.K.A. The PC Gamer intern.
The senior intern.
Alpha, beta, yeah.
Yeah, sure. Let's not get ahead of ourselves here, Anthony.
So, man, March is turning out to be a pretty darn exciting month in PC gaming.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Certainly the most exciting one so far this year. We got Dawn of War coming out early this week, and Dragon Age 2, of course. Later next week, you just heard the Shogun 2 ad. We have Shogun 2 coming out.
Awesome.
Week after that, Crysis 2.
So tons. Oh.
I mean,
yep.
It's a busy month, and we couldn't be more excited about it. So, Josh Augustine, he's played more Dragon Age 1 than all of us.
Yes, and he's probably combined.
Probably.
And he's played more Dragon Age 2 than all of us. So you guys saw the review on our website right now. You know, Josh has his own individual opinion about things. I'd love to, we're going to ask him some questions about how he feels about the game so far. But I guess, first of all, how much have you played of the original and Dragon Age 2 total?
Let's see. The original, I played through the campaign. I completed the campaign two separate times, and I played about halfway through, in addition to that, three more times, and probably like a quarter way through, like six more times. So I probably put in, I don't know,
that's
like
obscene.
300 plus hours.
Yeah. Wow. Which is great, like in the best way possible.
Wow.
Thanks. My God, sir. Like, yes. I thought I've got like 100 hours, and I was like, I'm doing pretty good.
Hours, that's good for one playthrough. Yeah.
So it's safe to think of you not only as, you know, someone that knows that game in and out, but really enjoyed it, obviously.
Oh, yeah. I loved it. It's one of my favorite RPGs in a very long time.
Agreed.
Okay.
Yeah.
So try and think back before you started playing Dragon Age 2 and what your criticisms were or expectations were of the first and the second one, what you were expecting.
Yeah, definitely. The first one, I loved the feeling of being in this world. That you weren't just role-playing yourself, you were role-playing this world, essentially, kind of deciding what happens to this world. And just that feeling of there are 100 paths before you, which one do you want to take? And so you're just like, oh man, maybe I'll go to the Mage Tower first. Maybe I'll go help the elves first. Maybe I'll do that. The combat I loved is very tactical, very slow-paced. If you played on hard, it was very, very challenging. The animations were clunky, but other than that, I thought it was okay. Rogues were a little weak, which is disappointing for me. The classes didn't seem very balanced. If you could just have five mages, you would dominate everybody.
That's true. And like the rogues got pretty powerful eventually. Like when I started off, it was really tough because I played a city elf rogue.
Yeah.
The only one I played. And once you get to like level 20, he starts getting pretty strong.
Yeah, even then, bow and arrow rogue never really fell into its own. Its damage was pretty weak.
Yeah.
But yeah, and I love the companion characters. I loved interacting with their stories, and I loved finding those little gifts and then like giving to them, and then it unlock a little cinematic where they tell you more about themselves.
Yeah. Cool. So with all that in mind, what's your one sentence impression of Dragon Age 2 from what you played? You haven't finished it yet.
Yeah. No, I haven't finished it yet.
Lightning review.
One sentence? That is very difficult.
Yeah. You just wasted your sentence.
we're gonna let you talk after that.
Okay. But. My one sentence, it is a much more polished, singular-focused game.
Cool. Yeah. So secondary follow-up question to that is it more like Mass Effect, and is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I don't know about the whole comparison to Mass Effect, because there's so many aspects of Mass Effect. It depends what you're comparing it to. The combat is not at all like Mass Effect. I mean, the storyline, maybe your interaction with companions is probably much more similar to Mass Effect, where companions have, like, home areas that they go in, so you go to that area, and then you can interact with them there. You can't really talk with them on the journey or anything like that.
No campfire? Like, no campground like the other one?
No, no. There's no camp at all. You have a home, which is where a couple of the characters sit, but, you can't go to a camp and interact with them, and when you're out and about, they won't talk with you at all.
Oh, that sucks.
So you just have, like, so wherever you find them, essentially, is their home. Like, Varric, he's the dwarf with the big chest hair and telling stories and interacting with all the ladies. When you go to the tavern, he'll be there, and you can talk with him and stuff like that.
Can you give gifts like you could in Gain Affection?
No, not really. No, they have side quests a lot similar to Mass Effect, where
like
it's like
loyalty quests, kind
of. Yeah, exactly. And you do that, and then it unlocks special stuff for them.
Okay.
Okay. So let's kind of try and break it down into its parts and compare the first game and the second game. You mentioned you love the combat in the first game. How does it compare? Do you like it better? My impression of it so far, I put about 3 hours into the game, and the animations, like we said in our review, they feel spring-loaded, and that really makes a difference for me. It's not necessarily an action game. It is certainly not God of War or something suddenly somehow, but just that small difference of the impact that my character makes when he's throwing a fireball feels sharper, more precise, more active, and I love that.
Yeah, no, it's not an action game, but it certainly looks like one. All the complexity is still there. Where like before you could combine stuff, like you throw down oil flasks and you light it on fire with a fire spell and stuff like in the original one, all that complexity is still there. It's just kind of more behind the scenes. Like you can put on debuffs, like you can make a warrior can hit somebody and then the enemy staggers back, and while he's staggering, the rogue can do more damage. So if you want that complex combat, it's definitely still there. The sentence that they had said earlier in our preview was, they wanted push a button and awesome happens. And they definitely pulled that
BioWare.
Off. BioWare had said that. Yeah, sorry. Just the rogue, instead of, just waddling into position, teleporting behind the enemy, doing stuff like that, the biggest change in combat for me, the combat is better, it's faster paced. The biggest difference that I think players are noticing and not recognizing this is the issue is that the game is easier. On normal mode, at the default mode, the game is significantly easier. You don't need to pause and do strategy. So, if you're missing that element, just go up to hard, and it'll be just like the first game. You can pause, strategize. You have to calculate every spell. But the default mode is now just cruise through, play simple, don't worry about it.
And the difficulty can be changed at any time.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm playing on hard now, and it's perfect for me.
Yeah, exactly. Hard is perfect for me. I had to go to normal once because I choose my companions based on who I want, not what's good.
I do the same thing.
Yeah, so I have a bunch of mages and rogues, so if I have a boss, like, oh crap, I have no one to tank him. So, the biggest change to me is actually character customization. The way you choose what you do in combat. Rather than having these little short trees that the first one had, it's essentially broken up into cells. I don't know how to explain this. Into, like, boxes. And you have, like, 9 boxes to choose from. Mm-hmm. So then rather than choosing, like, I want to be a stealth rogue, I want to be a combat rogue, I want to be a kill rogue. Like, those are broken down into finer-tuned things. Like, do you want to hide? Do you want to debilitate the other person? Mm-hmm. Do you want to, use your powers to empower someone else or deflect damage from them? And so you're choosing these micro roles and combining it into your own bigger role. And you can choose anytime. You aren't locked to any number of them. You can put as many or as few points into each one as you want.
Yeah.
That's just like Dungeons & Dragons, the way they do it.
Yeah, except that every ability has at least like one or two upgrades that you can choose as well. So it's like one of my favorite abilities for my rogue is I throw down a clay pot and it enshrouds all my allies in fog. And like for a while, they're harder to hit. And like I can upgrade that. So while everyone has that, they also have higher defense. Or I can upgrade it so that when it's on me, I'm attacking and doing more damage. And so you can kind of even customize it. I mean, this is the best ability customization system in any RPG I've ever played. It's fantastic. It's reason alone to play it.
It looks great, too. I mean, it's such a clean interface. That some of the things I love most so far, I mean, again, I haven't really dug into the storyline. I haven't really had too much to say about how it compares yet. But the map is beautiful and minimal and simplistic and exactly what it should be. Like, I'm not guiding my character by watching an arrow on the mini map and things like that. The level up interface is really nice. Just like little technical enhancements that make it accessible, not more consoleized or whatever, like just cleaner, you know?
Yeah, I love this interface. It's very minimalistic. It actually is very similar to the latest Guild Wars 2 interface. That's what struck me immediately was there's no art elements around the edges of like ability boxes. It's all black lines. It's all black, minimal. So it looks almost like it's been painted on, I guess, to an extent. So everything is very minimal with very little textures or art. It's just colors.
It's really how do you feel about zooming out? Is zooming out far enough? Is it?
Yeah, it's fine. It's really no big deal. I mean, the only problem that I have is that the benefit of going all the way out in the original game is you can move around to click on someone that was obstructed before, and that's a little difficult now. But for the most part, switching between characters, I'm able to get it. At the very worst, I have to unpause it and run to the side for half a second, and then I have view.
Okay.
But that doesn't bother me at all. No.
So the other major element, of course, I want to get your impressions on the storytelling and just the narrative itself, but also how it's delivered and how that differs from Dragon Age, because that seems like the other thing that other people are talking about.
Yeah. This is where I'm a little more disappointed. Combat, I would say, is combat and character customization, ability, stuff like that is 10 times better than the original one. And I think the story is probably about three quarters as good. So, you know, it depends what you're more interested in. But the big difference here is I'm playing through. All of the choices and consequences of my choices are so obvious and isolated from each other that it feels like I'm going down a checklist almost. Like, I run down this hall, I do this quest, the quest giver asks me, am I happy about it or am I angry? And then when I give my answer, like, I can see BioWare's, like, developers putting a checkbox. Okay, he said angry, so next time he sees him, this guy's stand will be gone. Or next time I see him, you know, guy Y will be there instead of guy X. And and so when I run back there and I see the consequences, I'm like, okay, yeah, that's because I did that earlier. And nothing, I don't get that sense. Everything is very linear. You aren't, it's not like Dragon Age Origins where you have this huge world and you're going around. Everything is in this one city. And it does change over time, but all of those effects are so X to Y, not X, Y, Z, R, T, S, all of your choices combined to change the world. It's no, X to Y. Y to Z, Z to Q.
So it's one-to-one, kind of.
Yeah. Okay. And it feels very much like, okay, this was designed because they want to have, like, saved games. Like, this is the list that the saved game is going to take into Dragon Age 3.
Right,
like, all of these choices.
Yeah.
And so, I didn't get that feeling from Mass Effect 2. I really felt like all the choices, like, they created this sort of multivariate, you know, texture at the end.
Yeah, and you never really knew, like, what your choice would would influence or what choices you made caused what's happening right now, where it feels so apparent to me and it's so linear. It's just like, do this, then this happens. Do this, and this happens. You don't have the same choice in Dragon Age Origins where it's like, I'm going to go save the mages first so that they can help me with the elves. Or I'm going to go save the elves first and then the dwarves and then take on the big thing. It's very much, this is the order you're going.
Yeah.
And part of that is probably the way they frame the story because it's a narrative of a hero. You know, that they're telling one person's story in a line and it has to change over time. So there's a very strict order of events that has to happen. It's still a little disappointing overall.
Is there still like the playful interaction between, you know, whoever you select for your party? Like, are they still talking about? Okay.
Yeah, and some of that is fantastic. I mean, Varric, I'm sure everyone has seen him. He's the dwarf rogue with the open shirt chest, and he's the smooth talker kind of rogue you'd expect. And he has some of the funniest lines with the other kind of, I don't know how to say, like, scandalous character, the pirate wench lady. And so they just go back and forth where he's teasing her, like, you can rub your hand in it if you want. She's like, what are you talking about? He's like, my chest hair. Come on, you can rub it. It's right here. They go back and forth. And there's a lot of good characters.
It never works when I say it.
It doesn't work for him either. But it doesn't stop him from trying.
Well, this is relevant. He carries a giant crossbow around. I know you want one, Logan.
Yes. Oh, that's the missing piece.
His crossbow is actually called Bianca.
Nice.
Yeah, and actually, the character customization, part of it is each of your companions has a separate tree that's unique to them. So, like, that character has a separate ability tree called Bianca. And it's all about just the crossbow and using that. So, yeah, the companions are great. Some of them were lackluster. I mean, there's, like, an emo dude who's like, I was a slave and turned into a warrior, and now I'm trying to hunt whoever's down.
oh, but he's not here. I'm gonna mope in his mansion till he comes back.
Yeah, I want him dead.
And some
sounds
of them are
like
just
me, actually.
Whoa, good to know. Yeah. But yeah,
I walk a lonely road.
Yeah,
the system of giving all the companions their own home base, I really like, because it lets you see them in their element and they can interact with their environment, not just in the camp all over. There's a few characters from Origins that come back.
Morgan?
No Morgan yet. But, you know, the saved game, like, if you guys have read our face-off, I wasn't a big fan of transferring saved games over to the next game. But it was done incredibly smooth for this. Like, it's done a character customization and it breaks down exactly, if you load the save game file, exactly what all the choices will be, and kind of they mention Morgan based on your choices. Like someone will say, like, "Oh man, I ran into this mage out west or whatever that was doing crazy stuff." And so,
this is the total random question I want to ask earlier: is friendly fire enabled on normal in this one?
No. Yeah, I think it's only enabled on nightmare, or I think that's the name of the highest one. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember because I have this cool ability under the spirit tree. I'm playing as mage, where I basically make an enemy into a bomb, and when they die, it's an awesome ability.
Yeah,
when they die, they explode. I can't remember if it's hurting my allies or not, but...
Yeah. But I remember people saying that it was nightmare only. I didn't check myself.
You're probably right.
Yeah. Even still, I see a lot less abilities that say can damage allies or something like that.
Yeah.
There are a lot less AoE spells like that.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha. So to summarize, and like I don't want to put you in the position, you haven't finished the game yet. You haven't played it three times. Like, but... are you having more fun than Dragon Age Origins? Is that a fair way of putting it? Or
personally, I'm not. But I am an extreme story-obsessive person. Like, that is the most important. So even if the combat was 10 times as good and the story was only 9/10 as good, me personally, I would probably not enjoy it as much. I would say that it's a better game. It's definitely a better game. It has a broader appeal. And even people that love Dragon Age Origins will still love this game. I love this game, but, like, I would give my heart to Dragon Age Origins.
Yeah,
right. I'd just kiss this one.
Just take it out for like a nice movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe a little bit dinner.
Yeah, but it's fun. I mean, and it looks to have a lot of depth. I highly recommend everyone playing. There's really no reason to not play this if you like RPGs at all.
But well, in this, go ahead. Sorry.
So I'm not much of a fantasy guy, you know. So I started Dragon Age Origins, and I'll think I'll play Mass Effect again, and I did. But there's just so much, it just sounds like, especially after I read the review, there just sounds like there's so much awesome wrapped up in this game that I think I'm going to go for it. But should I start with Origins?
No, if you don't like fantasy games, no. I would say this one definitely feels less of a fantasy game. It's set in like a Middle Eastern style city.
Okay.
And there's a lot less focus on elves and knights and stuff. There's Kunari they seem to be vaguely based on like extremist Islam, I guess.
Okay.
I know, because they're obsessed with a book called the Qun, Q-U-N.
What do you know?
Yeah, huh. And they want to kill other people because they don't follow the Qun.
How about
that?
Yeah,
they're Americans.
Yeah, it's not very subtle political stuff, but their race is very interesting and not typical fantasy.
Right.
There's a lot of stuff going on. The way Dragon Age Origins handles magic is not traditional fantasy. Yeah.
So I would tell everybody, before you play Mass Effect 2, play Mass Effect 1. Feel the same way about...
No.
Okay, I'm in.
Yeah. There's
my weekend right there.
I don't know about that. I think I might play Mass Effect 2 before I play Mass Effect 1.
What?
No.
One reason I wouldn't is, number one, the story, but also number two, the... You know, I think it's harder. It would be harder to go from the combat in 2 to the combat in 1. You'd be like and also you'd having to dally with the inventory in 1 would be a little
Well, what if someone said, "I want to play. I'm only going to play one of the two."
Mass Effect 2.
That's what I would say. That's what I meant.
I'd say 1. I'd say 1 for sure.
I
love 1.
Well, it depends.
It's
tough.
Like
RPGs, go with the first one. If you're more of a shooter, you go with the second one.
That's a fair evaluation.
I think the story in the second one was better, honestly. I love Mass Effect 1.
I do love the story in 2, but I just wasn't sure about the beginning and like how they set it up. That was a real downer for me.
The plot twist in 1 was really cool.
Yeah.
Like, that really surprised me.
Yeah.
That's true. It's been a while since I played it. No Mako in the second one. I just, God.
That was the only bummer.
You really like that, though?
I love the Mako.
Those levels were four times longer than they needed.
I would have rather have walked.
Driving around with it.
Yeah.
I would have waited for a taxi.
Yeah, you ever get like stuck in a crater?
Yeah, multiple times.
Oh, so Mako sections were not made well, but I had fun with them anyways. It's kind of like playing a crappy game. Like, you know, like, okay, yeah, like, I see this. This is fun. It's a nice diversion. I loved pressing the space bar, like, going sideways into a wall.
It was like hydraulic for like a hovercraft.
Mowing down hundreds of people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man. I was all about it.
You guys. All right. So speaking of sci-fi, so when I think about us as a group, as a group of gamers, and when it comes to mechs, okay, you know, mech games, giant robots, I think all of us here at PC Gamer kind of feel like lonely housewives waiting for a big, strong, bipedal robot to come fix our sink.
Please. Yeah. Please.
That's the mode we've been in for the past, like, 4 or 5 years at least.
More than that, maybe even.
I bust my own pipes all the time, just waiting, you know.
Take a big monkey.
Oh, yeah. Mr. Giant Robot.
Yeah, yeah.
Why don't you come down, got some lemonade for
Uh-huh, yep.
Some oil and lemonade, I don't know.
Yep.
Okay. Where am I going with this? So on our website today, we posted a trailer for a game that just got announced yesterday. It's called Hawken. Say that with me. Yeah, terrific. So independent multiplayer mech shooter. Okay, first person. Mm-hmm. And oh my freaking God, does it look gorgeous?
This is me.
It really is you.
It's one of the best trailers I've seen all year, and it doesn't feature a lot of first-person gameplay. It's sort of, you know, spectating third-person gameplay, but supposedly made by 9 developers in 9 months, and it just looks incredible. It's running on Unreal 3.
How is that possible? Like, are good they engine, just geniuses,
yeah.
or...
Yeah.
They probably don't sleep. I'm not sure, but so there's very little known at this time. They do have a website up, but go check out the trailer on our website first of all. Please just go watch this. There's a little bit of gameplay. They show like 2 seconds of first person cockpit action at the end, but what I loved about it most. I mean, there's a lot of nice technical stuff that they're showing off there. So the lighting has that kind of like high contrast illumination that we associate with Call of Duty, for example, that we like in Call of Duty, where like. You're not in this totally gray world. It's actually very bright. And the setting kind of feels like a dusty or sunny, like, I don't know, almost like Los Angeles in Blade Runner, but during the day. Like, very, very sunny. Like, there's neon signs and stuff, and it's kind of...
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, deserty and rundown, like, with a tinge of apocalyptic, but not destroyed or cratered or anything.
Hmm.
So, kind of, you know, what seems like a very original-looking setting. The robots have jetpacks, which is great. We love jetpacks.
Kind of required for
mech.
There's a lot of flying around the trailer. I mean, you get the sense that the jetpacks have, like, really long burn times almost. Like, you're not just kind of hopping from a ledge, but you're gliding from place to place. And the mechs don't seem as heavy as something as MechWarrior. You're certainly not, like, rotating your torso. It's not that kind of, like, 80-ton, I don't know, like, 40-foot high or whatever mech. It's more than a suit, certainly, I think.
So it's, like, Armored Core?
Yeah, Armored Core, but a lot more mobile and not Japanese. I mean,
Gundam minus the Japanese.
Yeah,
that would take away the Gundam, I think.
Yeah,
actually, wait, now I'm confused.
And
is it like Ed 209?
I didn't watch that.
You didn't watch RoboCop?
Oh, I thought that was an anime or something. I have seen I mean, it's certainly more mobile than that. I mean, like. From what the trailer showed, you know, it could be different. This is only like a 3-minute trailer, and maybe a minute of it was spectated gameplay. But it seems very FPS-y. I mean, what they were showcasing, again, they could have set it up in this way, but all the combat was very close quarters. Like, you're circle strafing the person next to you. You're firing missile barrages and shotguns and things like that. So it's definitely not like the walking tank.
Were they fighting in the air or on the ground?
It was on the ground. It was in an urban area. They were, like, leaping around a little bit. It looks outstanding. I emailed those guys immediately and just said, hey, let's talk.
Give me game now.
So we know they're going to be showing off another trailer with more gameplay another week or two or a month or so or sometime soon. Be on the lookout for that. But please, if you and your family, as Logan would say, watch one trailer this year.
Yeah, this could be the most important trailer you view all year.
There it is. There it is. More important than Dead Island, definitive. I think. Yeah. Cool. So keep an eye on that. So in more corporate and traditional news this week, I want to highlight a quote from EA president Frank Gibeau, who was talking about how the PC might become EA's biggest platform, or its most popular, biggest selling platform. So,
wow.
Continue.
Yeah.
So, you know, just backing up a little bit, EA CEO John Riccitiello was saying in an interview that, you know, the digital business is becoming bigger and bigger. It's bigger than retail gaming right now, full stop. He's saying when you think about DLC and, you know, just smaller downloadable games and just how they've exploded in popularity over the past year or two.
Yeah.
So Frank Gibeau, he's sort of echoing those comments and talking to Gama Sutra, and he's talking about the PC specifically, and he's saying, the user base is gigantic. From our perspective, it's an extremely healthy platform. It's totally conceivable that it will become our biggest platform.
Welcome back. Give us a big hug.
Yeah.
I'm here for you. No, you know what? No hard feelings. Hop right into bed.
Absolutely. So, I mean, I'm sure part of that is he's probably talking about the Old Republic, you know, their biggest, allegedly their most expensive game to date, and supposedly, you know, what they're targeting to be a WoW killer, if I don't want to throw that term around too recklessly, but
yeah.
Is this comforting to hear from EA? Is it what they should have been saying for a long time? Are they late on this? Is it just nice to hear?
Yeah, it's better late than never. I mean, it's great to hear. I mean, the more big names that are out there promoting the PC and recognizing the insane digital distribution method that's so popular, I mean, the better.
It's great to hear. I'm one of those guys who it's like, well, that's good to hear, but I'd like to see it supported. EA has been great. Mass Effect, like Dragon Age, right? They've been great games, so keep that up, certainly. And sure, if you want to, I mean, say the PC is that awesome, I'm all for that. And the digital market is huge, but I almost wonder, it's like, are they just going to shift their entire focus to digital markets now and just say, well, the hell with physical media?
I think it's something they're exploring significantly. I mean, Battlefield Play for 3 is a big focus that has a pretty significant amount of users. I know Battlefield Heroes allegedly has 7 million accounts now.
Yeah.
You know, not necessarily active, but 7 million people registered to play that game.
How much money do you think a company would save for eliminating packaging and manuals and just doing digital delivery?
He actually addressed that, and he said, I'm quoting him here, PC retail may be a big problem, but PC downloads are awesome. The margins are much better, and we don't have any rules in terms of first-party approvals. He's talking about, like, not having to talk to Microsoft and go through certification. Yeah. So that's convenient and they make more money.
So do you know if he was saying, like, he was speculating that they would be making the most money from PC soon, or if he was actually saying, like, they were planning to change something?
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, it does have a bit of a ring that's almost kind of pitiful, you know, like, yes, we are still, you know, giving our attention to this platform, you know, whereas, you know, that would be obvious if, you know, you almost feel like, well, you wouldn't need to say that if you were doing it. But the way I look at it is that, you know, the PC is the only platform that doesn't need hundreds of millions of dollars in promotion every year to keep it going.
Right.
It's going to thrive no matter what. So I think when these kinds of statements are made, I think it's sort of a corporate response to all the changes that are happening on our platform. I mean, our platform is the platform of change. Constantly, and they're saying, you know, they're saying, look at all this stuff that's happening. Look at what we're able to do with Tor. Look at what we're able to do with free to play. You know, who would have guessed that free to play would be as big today as it is? Just 3 years ago, it was almost unthinkable. You know, like, what? How can you build a, you know, how can you make money with such a thing? And now it's just exploding. And I think that statements like these are just saying, hey, we're taking stock of this and we're on it, you know, come join us because this is where the action is happening. You know, we know what the consoles are for. We understand their roles. Everybody does. But if you want to join us on the cutting edge, come on over to here because this stuff is happening now.
Yeah. I mean, free to play, we can't underline enough. I was talking to Josh about this yesterday. We were looking at an interview that Mark Merrill, the president or CEO?
President
for Riot Games, League of Legends, you know, they got bought by, just to put this in perspective, they got bought by a company called Tencent in China, who's basically the Google, Facebook, you know,
and
Yahoo.
AOL.
And AOL of China. This is a huge company, and they bought Riot Games, who made one game, one free-to-play game.
I mean, I mean, it's incredible. I mean, just talking with them, like, they obviously won't go into how much money they're making or anything, but they always say, like, they're doing very comfortable, like, they're having no problems, and just, it's amazing how many people are playing that game. Like, we we just set up a guild for Tor, which I'll talk about later. But just in there, when we were talking about Tor, people were talking about other MMOs they're playing. And I found like 10 people that are playing League of Legends. I now have 10 new friends in League of Legends that we can play with right. anytime.
So I feel like this is EA's signal flare, not just to gamers, but to investors, to developers, to other publishers, going, okay, yeah, we get it, and we're going in this direction. Come on over and check out what we'll do. We know this is going on. We see the cutting edge, and we want to be there. We want you to be there with us.
It's just another way that we're benefiting from that extended console lifespan, where publishers aren't in this cycle with their resources, where they're saying, okay, well, every 4 years or 5 years are going to be a new console, so we need to get ready for new engines, new iterations of franchises and new peripherals.
New licensing schemes and everything.
And they're exploring these new ways to make money on the PC because it's cheap. They can experiment easily. Mm-hmm. They can deploy builds on the same day and things like that. And it's a great way for them to experiment.
Do consoles do like open beta testing like we do in the PC? Like, I honestly don't.
Very rarely.
It's very rarely. So there's also that benefit, too. It's like you're getting... Yeah. Free beta testing to a certain degree.
It happens. I mean, like Crysis, for example, had an open beta.
Did it on console. Yeah.
A lot of PlayStation games.
Yeah, I mean, as a PC gamer, you don't ever have to pay for games. There's so many free games and open betas and stuff like that.
That's
true. You could easily fill your time with that.
Yeah.
Outstanding. All right, so talking about the cutting edge, I want to have Chris talk a little about something he couldn't talk about last week.
Yeah, I really wanted to.
Yeah, during our GDC podcast.
It's painful not to mention it, because it was by far like the best thing I saw there, by far, which is the HD 6990, which is now AMD, by the way. ATI is gone.
Sigh.
But it's the same brand, same card, same makers, just a new acronym.
That's a head scratcher, huh?
Yeah, I don't really get that. But anyway, but the card is awesome. So it's like this super, super expensive, I think it's like $800 or
something. Some people are calling it the fastest video card.
It's intense.
Right now.
It's a dual card. So basically they sandwiched a couple of, I don't remember, even if they were existing cards, they didn't say. I think it's basically like a 6950 sandwiched together, essentially. Yeah, so it's essentially a crossfired card smashed together and put on a die. Now, the unique thing is there is an overclocking switch on the damn card. It's just like a little lever.
So a physical switch.
Yeah, a physical switch. And not only that, when you click that switch, the standard clock speed is 830 megahertz. And for people wondering, that's pretty quick by itself. When you click the switch, it pushes it up 50 megahertz, like 50, which is really damn intense. Yeah. That's tough to do when you're overclocking just in software. And so my first question was like, well, and this was everyone's first question, what happens if someone pushes that? What happens to the warranty? And, yeah, it instantly voids it. So, and we were like, well, that's great, but, like, a lot of people aren't going to know. Like, and they're like, well, there's a yellow piece of tape on it. It's like, yeah, but...
There's, like, a little miniature pen inside the video card that signs your signature as you flip that switch.
And then, a lot of the guys there were like, well, how are you getting... Like, what if someone switches it, blows the card, and just switches it back? Like, how do you know? And they're like, well, consumers are honest. Like, dude, like, consumers are not honest.
No.
Like,
it'd be great if the switch, when you moved it, there was a sticker that said warranty, and then a red line goes across it.
They were saying that their engineers would technically know because you could trace. I don't know how.
Maybe it blows purple ink all over you, like when you rob a bank and you open the cash bag and it goes. Poof.
So, Chris, I think this is debuting at $700.
They said the price wasn't finalized when I was there, and that it was changing. So that very well could be. And
you can sell a kidney in the third world for about $10,000.
Yeah. Their defense, this is not aimed at like the average Joe. This is very much aimed at the luxury crowd. And it's supposedly. We're talking about testing this against a newer GTX card, which I don't think. Can we talk about that one yet? The new NVIDIA card is coming out. I don't know.
It's your card is going to blow up.
Let's not do that. So anyway, but NVIDIA is, I can say NVIDIA is looking to rival this. I'm not sure they will because this is just really, really intense. So I'm pretty psyched. I want to get one, take a look at it. We heard rumors it was loud. I didn't think it was that loud when I was listening to it for what it is. Of course, it is, a big damn card, so it's going to be not quiet. But yeah, I'm pretty psyched. It's got like five different display outs on it, so you can run like six panels in Infinity.
Did you notice how much heat was coming out of it, it tucked away?
It was pretty much tucked away.
That's what I figured.
Which was probably intentional.
Right. You're exhausting it out the building.
Yeah. It was probably heating the building. Other than that, pretty psyched. It's been a while since we got one of these insane cards.
Yeah.
So Bring it on. I'm cool. All for it.
All right. Yeah. Graphics cards, the numbers will continue to increase.
Yeah.
Until they decide to do a new way of representing them.
I'm really digging that lever.
Yeah. No, that's awesome.
It's like a gear shift. Faster.
You know, just before we started podcasting, I got into this thing, and you know, I'm not really an obsessive person, of course, but there, I just noticed that Krievers became available on Steam. Josh just gave me a look. He gave me the look of disapproval. But I got to say, it's on Steam right now, and it's a game that involves like these strange, luminous woodland creatures. So naturally,
go on.
Yes, my curiosity was you know, piked, and or is it peaked?
Peaked.
Is it peaked? Yeah. Really? Okay. So it was peaked. At least I know how to spell it. PIQUED.
Right.
And yeah, and so I was amazed in the first few levels that it uses a hissing and biting mechanic. If you press F, the little creature opens its mouth and goes, and that's how you intimidate the other creatures of the forest.
So does this have like crossover play with like hunting games or
like
something?
Like Cabela's Hunting Challenge.
No, it's a platformer set in a strange nocturnal peaceable kingdom. Well, sort of peaceable.
It'd be peaceable if you're hissing at people.
Well, yeah, okay, no, there's that. But
was
still
peaceable until you came around.
I just sat there for like 15 minutes humping the F key over and it's just mesmerizing, and so I.
Does their back go up and like the hair stand straight on end? Like,
no,
like,
but he kind of throws his head back and he's like, but I've only just started, and there's another, that's Bitey, but there's another character named Pokey who shoots his quills out of his back. So
is his name really Bitey?
Yeah,
do you know where
really
that comes
Bitey
from?
No.
Does anyone know that? Yes. Who said that? Was that Anthony?
That would be special guest Chris Dantista from Games Radar.
Who got it right? Yes, that's from the monorail episode of The Simpsons. There's an opossum in the engine, and Homer's like, "I call the big one Bitey."
Dan would have gotten that.
Yeah, I'm just very, very into this. So if you are also fond of woodland creatures, there it's Krievers on Steam.
How do you even spell it?
Like creatures, but with a V. Krievers. Krievers. Nice. Right. I just got a look of disapproval from Josh. What do you have against woodland creatures?
Well, that look of disapproval is for the name. Like, really, you're just going to randomly swap a letter? That's more likely to be a typo than anything. Like, they tried to hit the T, but they hit the
right
V on
set. Like, crap. Yeah, just print it, Joe.
Yeah.
I would like to say I think the HD 6990 would run that game at about 10 billion frames a second. Yeah.
Don't be a hater.
I think it's time for a segment Chris likes to call
Truthiness and Falsity.
There we go.
Let's
Chris.
Go there.
That's it. Right. All right. We got some hard freaking questions.
Yeah, I saw them, and it's a little bit of a mental workout.
I would like to set ground rules ahead of time. Logan is not allowed to hiss at me for any of my opinions.
Oh, wait. Damn.
All right. So just to keep things moving, let's try and keep it relatively quick because these are challenging questions. Josh, I'm going to put this one at you first because you were talking about Dragon Age. It's relevant to you. Number one, true or false?
False.
Can I hiss at him?
Sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry. I will not do that again.
It's fine.
I already did that the first time. It's old. I'm
false.
Sorry.
All right. Truthiness and falsity. Number one. Many PC gamers overreact to the alleged consoleization of franchises like Crysis 2 and Dragon Age 2.
Absolutely. Yes.
That's true.
I would say like it's I would say games are sort of being consoleized, like those things are happening, but that doesn't. So many gamers think that if that's happening, it makes it a worse game. And in a lot of cases, like in Dragon Age 2's combat, it made it a much better game in that regard. So, yeah. Overreaction.
Chris.
True. I would say my most recent example would be Bulletstorm. I'm not sure they're way off the mark when saying that these are console games that are on the PC, but these are great console games that are on the PC. Gears of War, for example. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's a bad thing. Bulletstorm was obviously made for the console. It's a great freaking game.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't jump. It's tough to use the controls. It takes a little bit of getting used to. But it's awesome. Yeah, so I don't think... I think that's overreacting. Play the game. Judge it on the game itself. Don't judge it on what it was developed for.
Sure. Logan?
False. I think it is... While I agree with Josh and Chris's point so far, I just... It's like... you know, I think we should fight to keep things as PC as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, I play on the PC for a reason, and it just I agree with Chris, you know, judge it on its own merits, but it just pains me to see, you know, a great game that could have been a little more if the controls had been, you know, refined a little more for the PC, or, you know, even just starting up a game and then you start it and then it says press start to begin.
Yeah.
And you're like, you know, and it just feels like something that got neutered, you know, or spayed or something like that. You know, and I think even though I know it gets a little heated, you know, at times, and people are, oh, I can't believe this got the console trailer. I think people should scream and yell and let developers and publishers know how passionate they are about getting PC controls.
Logan, defender of the forum trolls.
I guess that's impressive.
The troll. What have I done?
All right, cast the final vote, Mr. Anthony Valva.
We're going 50-50 here because I got falls. I'm with Logan on this one. God. Because all you got to think about is this. Imagine if Blizzard made Diablo 3 for the console.
Basically did, because they said they want to bring it to the console and it's going to go to console eventually, just not at launch.
Dun, dun, dun.
So does that change your opinion at all?
No, of course not.
It does make me a little nervous.
Press start to begin.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Why? The game is going to be great. Everything you've seen about the game, nothing you have seen.
Diablo 3 is not a game. That's not meant for a gamepad, dude.
Torchlight just came out
joystick
on Xbox.
Spam A, yeah, but 100 times.
Yes, but Torchlight came out and was established in the PC forever, so it's not like, yeah, you know.
we'll see. Let's move on. I mean the analog I make, it's interesting, like with the prevalence of 3D in film, it's almost like I wonder if there's filmmakers or film enthusiasts that see films being made for 3D and how that might compromise like the traditional form of expression that are like they're sort of,
yeah. And 3D does seem like it's very binary. People hate it or they love it.
Right.
There's nothing in between.
Cool.
I love it.
So,
it's great. Yeah.
Cupcakes flying at the screen. Oh, no.
You just hate fun. That's what it is.
All right. So, we were all at GDC last week. Chris, you had a good time. You talked about what you saw.
Mm-hmm.
Is GDC the best gaming expo?
You going right to me?
Yeah. True or false?
False. No way.
And
no.
You would say...
Okay, so I would say false for me personally because I have such a connection with PAX. I think PAX for me will always be the best because there's so many like-minded just average people there. Where GDC is very much journalist heavy, I mean, by the very nature of it, which is great. It's low-key. It's not intense. There's not stereo speakers blasting in your ears. The sick people weren't that sick. Where at PAX, everyone gets sick. I think that gives PAX character, so that's why. Nope, PAX. No offense, GDC. Love you.
That's fine. Josh?
Yeah, I definitely agree with Chris on this one. PAX is definitely the people's, and E3 is definitely better for journalists. GDC is more for the developers, and I'm not a developer. And I don't think it serves the people nearly as well. There's not as many exciting announcements coming out of there, usually.
Logan?
I would agree. I mean, false. It's PAX.
Yeah.
It's just being able to hang out with fans and readers and other gamers and all that and just get stupid with them.
Better parties at PAX, too.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. Anthony, I'm not sure if you've been to PAX or E3. But...
I'm going with true on this because GDC is the only convention I've ever been to.
There you go.
Pretty good answer.
Good answer.
Outstanding. Yeah. I do appreciate that last week at GDC, like, I got introduced to the guy that did the soundtrack, Danny Baranowski, for Super Meat Boy.
Not just introduced, dude. You were on that guy's lap in a photo.
Wait, whoa.
Yeah, I mean, one of my friends, Aaron Robinson, who I went to high school with, who made puzzle bots on Steam.
Nice.
Go check it out. She introduced me to him, and I was like, "Oh, hey, I know you. I love your music. I loved he did Cannonball, the music for that.
Nice.
Mm. That side-scrolling game and Gravity Hook." And I was like, "Oh man, we should totally do an interview." And we just did an interview, and he picked me up off the ground like, within a half an hour of knowing this person. So it was pretty cool.
That's GDC. You never know whose lap you're going to be.
Exactly. That's GDC. Yeah. All right. Number three. This is going to elicit some listener questions and comments, I think. I'm gonna go to Anthony first. True or false, Gordon Freeman isn't a good character, and any affection for him is simply misdirected appreciation for the good time that you had in Half-Life 1 or 2.
Wow.
False. Gordon Freeman's a great character because he is essentially all of us in the game. I mean, he's the geek, he's the nerd, he's the smart guy. I mean, he's us in the game. He's representing us. That's why he's such a great character. And he's the only character, like, Don't you shake your head at me.
I'm not biting his hand.
I'm not trying to be quiet.
He is actually purple right now.
I'm not done talking yet.
All right.
But like, look at like Marcus Phoenix, okay? Marcus Phoenix is Marcus Phoenix. You are not Marcus Phoenix, but you are Gordon Freeman. And it's not just because he's a silent character. It's because he's always in that first-person mode. You're seeing everything he's seeing. The game, it's not taken from you. Yes, that is part of the game mechanics, but it also creates the character of the game.
Okay. Okay.
Now, well put. Well put.
Yeah, let's go, Chris.
Yeah, wait. Okay, was it true that he's a... Okay, so...
Sorry, true would be that, indeed, he is not a good character.
True beyond belief. He is not a good character. He is the worst character. There is no character to him. He's a dude in a suit. Well, I'm just saying, because like if you're judging by character, like Josh was talking about in Dragon Age, there is no character. He has a crowbar. I mean, it's never not awkward whenever you see Alex or whoever, and they're talking to you, and you're just sitting there staring at him. That's not what I would do if I was the character. I want to behave. I want to interact. I want to react. Mm-hmm.
But you can't answer Alex. You can't talk to her. You, Chris, cannot talk to Alex. Therefore, Gordon does not speak to Alex.
That's because he's not a character.
It's because you are him, but you don't have the ability to
speak. If I'm him,
to
why can't I speak?
Man,
I just
this is getting deep.
I'm sorry.
Do we have Knock'em Sock'em Robots here? That'd be
awesome. I'm going to kick it over to Josh, get his perspective.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to align myself with Chris here, as dangerous as that may seem. Yeah. I'm going to say that Gordon Freeman, he is a very well-made character. Like, I totally agree with everything Anthony said. He is perfectly crafted to let the player take on that role. But that doesn't make him a good character. He's a horrible character, but he's a very well-made character to serve the purpose of not being a character so I can project myself
into the
game.
So you're saying he's a very useful device,
yes,
but not necessarily someone that you...
No, he's not a memorable or particularly like interesting character.
He's third-person limited in PC gaming.
Well, here's the thing. All right, what does a character do? They help express the story, correct?
No.
No.
They provide meaningful relationships. They interact with you and respond to your activities and... provide feedback for everything you do, give you toys to play with and against.
Well, yes, but I mean, essentially, if there's no character, you're not experiencing the story, correct? Because you can't play the game.
Okay, but there are a lot of other elements at play. So this is a faulty argument at the start.
Hold on. Let me finish. Okay. Let me finish. The best type of character helps express the story because they are the only way you are able to experience the story is through their actions.
Are you saying... character that you're playing as or character in a game?
You're playing as.
Okay.
So, as playing as Gordon Freeman, he's the best storyteller because
he doesn't tell the story. He allows you to tell the story through him. He's the best conduit to make you the storyteller. Yes.
All right. Let's see what Logan thinks.
This is the final nail. It rests in Logan's lap.
Taking a big stretch here. Oh, that feels good. You know how when you just like... pull your spine and you try to arch it as much as possible.
God, you're killing me with the tension. You have no...
Yeah. Gordon Freeman, I think, is not just the best character. He's actually not the best character. He's actually the perfect character because he is both literally and figuratively my avatar in the game, reflecting my feelings, my interaction with the story and its characters. He is very much the perfect game character. And I really don't think it can get any better than that. That kind of characterization. Yeah. You can equal it, but I just can't imagine topping it.
How about this? What about women playing the game? They would have a much harder time projecting themselves.
Oh, I wouldn't. If Gordon was Gordette,
but,
I wouldn't. I would still be able to relate much.
I would argue that it's almost useful that Gordon doesn't convey any, like Marcus Phoenix, any masculinity or anything so prominent that would offend a girl potentially. I don't know.
Yeah, or oblate your ability to, you know, to kind of fill
right.
in that.
I'll agree. He's the best non-character because you are the character.
Oh no, 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 no. Oh no, yeah.
Josh is right.
You don't get. He's the best character that you could possibly have in a game.
He's
virtuous. He's everything I am in the game. He's everything
no,
I bring
to
the game.
You are everything.
Yeah,
you
that's,
are.
That's
in
why
the
he's
game.
The perfect character. That's why he is. Perfect.
Because he is nothing.
He's a nihilist. He believes in nothing.
He's the lens through which I project myself in the game. And again, literally and figuratively, my avatar representation and the apotheosis of the perfect character.
I mean, it's a really interesting conversation when you think about what's more useful in a game. Is it someone that is simply a good character in the terms of that we think in films and books and things like that, that is well-rounded, is interesting, is dynamic, that grows over time, or that operates as just the perfect device for our experience.
Logan, do you prefer when you're reading books, you read books, first person or third person? Which do you like better?
Oh, it depends on the story entirely. Yeah.
But doesn't it...
I'm sorry, I get 1.2 yeah, votes, so that means that Josh and Chris are wrong.
Evan agreed with you, so it's wrong. Already 3-2.
Right, so that means you're even more wrong. Wait, I want to see him turn purple again. That was wrong.
I'd love to hear some more thoughts in our comments.
We do like a whole podcast in that, really. Yeah, pretty deep.
On you being wrong or on that question?
Instead of a podcast, let's just have a boxing match. It'll be easier.
Bop.
So let's move on to something more... More base, I guess.
All right.
Chris, this relates directly to one of your interests. This is a newsletter you subscribe to, so to speak. Which weapons are more fun? Unreal. I'm gonna put this in true and false statements. Sorry.
Okay.
Unreal Tournament's weapons are more fun than Quake 3's.
Than Quake 3, specifically Quake 3.
Specifically Quake
3. True. Very true. Wow. Okay. So Unreal Tournament favorite weapon was, even though I sucked at it, was the ASMD shock rifle. Where they really use that secondary motion where you could shoot the ball, and if you're good enough,
detonate.
You could hit it and detonate it. The portable
I
nuke
hate
launcher.
People who are good at that.
Dude, like, those people. Yeah, I did too. But, like, the portable nuke launcher, Quake 3 is nothing on that. Where you can go into first person perspective and guide a nuke around, or you can just shoot it at your feet and wipe out an entire room just because you suck. I did that all the time. Mm. People get so pissed.
See, that's what I love about Quake 3's weapons. They are more simple, but they're so reliant on your finesse that using them and winning with them makes you feel so smart.
And I mean, you're so frustrated when, dude, there's no, dude, like, learning curve.
Hitting
there.
Somebody with a railgun at full speed at a, like, an absurd range, you feel like a god. That does not happen for me in Unreal Tournament.
That's because there's no kill. Like, if you suck, like, because I'm not good at Quake 3, I'll admit it. When I went, like Vagabond, it was just, like, 40 to negative 10. Like, what? That does nothing for me. If I'm in Unreal Tournament and I have, a nuke, well, at least I can get some satisfaction from taking them out cheaply.
That's great.
Yeah.
Josh.
Yeah, I would definitely. This is weird. I think I agreed with Chris on everything.
This is bizarre.
I don't know. Because the question specifically was more fun, right?
Yeah. You know, however you define fun.
Yeah, I definitely had. I guess I would say that I had a lot more fun with Unreal Tournament's weapons. Just the style and the interactions and the way you ways you can kill. Where you what the green one is that like melts them.
The bio gun,
just stuff like that. I had a lot more fun with those guns.
I know Logan's a proponent of one very specific.
The flak gun.
There it is. Yeah.
Flak cannon.
Flak gun.
You can
end
bounce that off walls and stuff.
Yes,
right?
That was the most Tom and Jerry of all the weapons.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And just when you've got two people chasing each other around in circles with a flak gun, you have the greatest time ever.
Yeah.
That's just end of story for me.
It's the best shotgun in the game.
Quite a few times I wandered into two people dueling with the flak gun, and I was just shredded because it's like a ball of shrapnel around them. Just turn the corner. Oh God.
Yeah. The
that's really unfortunate.
Yeah.
Yeah, the air to flak ratio of the sphere that you're in is like 2-1 or something.
Yeah.
Anthony.
Two words. Flak cannon.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I think that's a universal except for me.
Yeah.
All right. It's kind of a random one. I was curious about it, though. I'm gonna throw it at Josh first. Duke, true or false, Duke Nukem Forever won't sell well. I'm not sure what well means, but what do you think?
I'll say that it will sell well. Yeah, it'll be commercially successful. It won't be a big blow-up game like Crysis 2 or something like that, but it's going to do just fine.
Logan is pouring.
Sorry, I didn't think it would be pick up. I got to have my iced tea. I cannot live without iced tea.
There's definitely enough hype around
it. We support that.
Yeah. There's definitely enough hype, and people are excited about it, and just Duke coming back. I mean, people are going to buy that. Yeah.
I'm going to be really controversial here and say, I'm going to say that it's true. It won't sell well. I don't think. And I'm actually going to take that one step further and say it's going to sell better on the consoles than it will on the PC.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So,
and the reason for that is because I think people are going to... There's no way... It could be a perfect game. It's not going to live up to 10 years of hype. It's impossible. I mean, what other game has ever done that? I mean, I would say, maybe it's possible. But I think that's so tough. I think there's a lot of people like me who are so fanboyish with Duke Nukem 3D that unless it's just a reskin... It's gonna be one sucks.
But aren't you gonna buy it and then say it sucks? So it'd still be successful.
I don't know. I don't know if I would. Really? But I think consoles are not they're not subjugated to Duke like we are. Duke is like almost a mascot, like Gordon Freeman is, right, for the PC. At least I think so.
Yeah.
And so I think the consoles are going to be more forgiving.
Anthony Valva.
It's going to sell well. The real question is, though, are the people that, like the younger generation, like the generation below me, are they going to embrace Duke the way we are? Because they haven't been exposed to Duke. They've only heard Duke through myth and legend.
Yeah.
So whenever they pick up the game, do you think that it's going to be like, oh, this is it? This is all I got?
Right.
Or are they going to be like, this is awesome? Like, I'm pretty sure most of us are going to experience it as.
Is this Duke's last hurrah?
Yeah.
I think the big question is, because obviously Gearbox is going to do a franchise of this, is that will it be as successful as, say, like Halo or Gears of War with the younger generation?
Yeah.
That's the question, is if they make this into a series, is it going to be as big of a seller?
Yeah.
The measuring stick for me is Borderlands, which I believe sold 4 million.
Oh, it's done amazing.
So if it does better or worse than that, that's what I'm going to be most curious about. Logan?
I don't think it'll do better than Borderlands. In fact, I think it'll be probably, you know, my grandfather used to say fair to middling, you know?
Yeah.
yeah, you can't help but pick it up for the curiosity factor, you know, for the nostalgia. But there's also a sense that, you know, it was just a different era, you know, when we were all loving Duke, and it doesn't feel as funny as it used to, you know. It's I'm not saying they should have done an ironic take on it. It's just, you know, I don't see it as a franchise that has a lot of legs.
I think, sorry, I didn't mean to rip anyone,
but you did.
For good reason.
I'm not gonna shoot you in the kneecaps, but yeah,
I think one of the big things that's made Duke stick out from everyone else is the humor. I mean, it really did poke fun at everyone else. But, I mean, look at Bulletstorm. I mean, Bulletstorm is completely Duke Nukem-esque type of humor. So now Duke Nukem is not going to be able to stick out. One of the main topics that I had was that humor.
The difference is it has a very recognizable mascot.
Well, yeah.
As opposed to the gameplay being the humor. Right. I don't know. We'll see.
Can we please, please bring back Kate Archer?
I beg you. Contract Jack was okay, but it wasn't super.
Who has the rights to that?
Monolith
probably. I don't know if it's a publisher, but maybe Sierra, maybe?
I think Sierra.
Because if it's Sierra, it'd be Activision.
Maybe we can do a Kickstarter project.
Yeah.
Give us $2 million, $10
million. I just want to
know what Monolith is doing. I loved Fear 1, and then I didn't, you know, what are they doing? I don't know.
Afraid. That's like their sequel to Fear. Sorry, I got nothing.
Yikes. Let's get out of here and get into some listener questions before Chris punifies this podcast.
Molecular from San Angelo, Texas here. I just downloaded Crysis 2's demo. I'm a little worried. Crysis 1 multiplayer, huge levels. You get to put villages inside of them. You have tanks and drive around in them, shoot the equivalent of alien nukes. You had a currency-based system of some kind in the game. It was pretty fun. Single player, same huge levels. It was fun because of those huge levels. The multiplayer in Crysis 2's demo, 6v6 tiny arenas on the top of a single building in New York City. Doesn't even look like there's a city out there beyond the buildings. It's just a painted skybox, and that's it. So I'm a bit worried that Crysis 2's single player is going to be disappointing. I'm willing to pay the $60 for Crysis 2, but not if it's actually going to be Crysis of Duty 4 Modern Nanosuit 2. Any thoughts? Thanks.
Thank you, San Angelo, repping us up here.
So this certainly relates to our, you know, not that this gentleman was overreacting or about the alleged consolidation of
sure.
right.
PC games, but... You know, what we've seen so far of Crysis, and certainly in the beta, is, you know, they're going for something that's more accessible. And whether or not that's going to be a good thing or a bad thing, we'll see. But, go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, I think so, too. I was actually going to plug our issue there, too. Buy our issue and read the review.
Yeah, that's going to be our cover story.
Yep.
Crysis 2 review.
Yep.
So, you'll find out, sir. But, I mean, what I can say, too, is I agree with Evan. It was maybe like Dragon Age. It felt probably like a little... better as far as the fighting went. There were a few moves that didn't work out that well, but definitely not as complex. Whether or not that makes it better or worse, well, we'll see.
There's a lot of backlash about the beta. I'm not sure what people were expecting, but I like the multiplayer. I really don't think it compares to Modern Warfare that much, other than the size of things. And, like, yes, there are perks and stuff like that, but they're not as prominent as they are in Black Ops and games like that, where they're literally, like, controlling the flow of the game, where you're calling in RC cars and turrets and things like that,
right,
or helicopters. Like, and that's happening so regularly in Call of Duty, and it kind of wears me out and takes the focus off the actual gunplay, whereas I think Crysis is about stealth and gunplay, and it's fun, and it works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is not in any sense an objective evaluation of the original Crysis multiplayer, but just personally, I prefer the tighter quarters of Crysis 2 multiplayer. I actually thought that the scenarios and the maps in the original Crysis multiplayer were too big, and there's just too much downtime, and it just kind of overwhelmed me. But again, that's just from a very, very personal perspective. And the Crysis 2 multiplayer that we enjoyed, it was frantic, on your toes, and yet still managed to be highly strategic.
Yeah, I mean, again, he was very concerned and curious about the single player, and that's something, again, you'll read in our review,
right,
you'll be
hearing
more about. But as for the multiplayer, I actually know that some of the guys that worked on it were part of a developer called Free Radical, worked on a game called Time Splitters on PlayStation, and they used to be part of the GoldenEye team,
which
is at
awesome.
Rare. So, I mean, I really think that in this case, just from what we've seen in the beta, that expertise is kind of transferred over, and
absolutely.
I think people have a lot to be excited about the multiplayer. But yeah, we'll see about the rest.
Bam.
Hi there, my name is Jesse Priest, and
outer space.
I live in Salem, Oregon. And I just wanted to ask you guys about first-person shooters, because I was a console first-person shooter kind of guy, and I've just recently switched to PC gaming, and I'm having a tough time with the transition, so I was wondering what the classic first-person shooters are for me to get ready to start fragging people online. Thanks a lot.
So he wants online shooters, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean
Counter-Strike. Obviously.
Quake Live, right, like we just talked about.
Well, I mean, what he's saying is, like, he's having trouble getting started. So I wonder if something like Quake Live would be the right thing.
In that case, no. Quake Live's brutal.
This is kind of a big question. I mean, certainly Counter-Strike Source, I think that's like the multiplayer shooter you would... Sorry, that was weird.
The world crashed.
It's such a familiar template. I wouldn't recommend something like Call of Duty unless that's maybe more familiar to what you're used to on console. But TF2...
TF2
like, certainly in the way that it provides, like, 9 roles that are very distinct that you can jump between, where, like, oh man, I'm not really doing very well as the medic, and this is rough, even though people said it would be easy. I'm gonna snipe. I'm just gonna sit back, and that's the thing that I do. I'm
or
gonna help my team
grief people by being a pyro, using the back burner, whatever.
Plus, just the whimsy takes the edge off. You know, like, you know, when you're first starting on something, it's less. It's somehow less aggravating, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know if this is true, Evan, but Team Fortress 2's community always seemed nicer to me than a lot of other online shooters that I played.
I
felt
so
much more comfortable there as kind of a bad shooter. Like, I never really got yelled at.
Certainly more so than Counter-Strike.
Yeah. Yeah, TF2, I would check that out. What about Monday Night Combat? That's a third-person shooter, though. Probably a little different.
Yeah, I mean, I love Monday Night Combat. I'm not sure if it's something I would recommend get starting out. It's sort of some unique mechanics. Bad Company 2 would certainly be one that's very easy to understand. It's not too complex, but a lot of fun. Yeah.
And if you ever wander into one of the lonely halls of Blacklight Tango Down, you can watch Chris shooting me in the head over and over and over over again.
That's a pretty good game, actually, too. Like, Blacklight is, I mean, very much built off mechanics what made Call of Duty good, but very unique. But it's simple
enough. $15.
Yeah, and the price is great. It's going free to play, actually.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
So that's happening, I think, in the next month or so. So, yeah.
Cool.
Which would make it that much better.
Yeah, one more thing I'll toss in there. Because he mentioned classic ones. I mean, we were talking about Unreal Tournament earlier. The reason I love that one is the fast respawn times and quick getting back into the battles. As someone who dies a lot, that was really helpful for me, just because if you fail, you immediately get back in there and try again, and it lets you just try over
great,
and over.
Great point.
It's one of the few multiplayer games with bots. You can just populate a map with bots and set the rules. You can do insta-give, which is like single shot.
That's a big help, right? Yeah. Because, you know, the low shame factor.
Yeah.
there was one thing I would recommend is if they're afraid to jump right into a multiplayer game and they just want to get used to the mouse and keyboard at first, I would recommend just, you know, picking up Portal, because it's it does get really crazy at the end. But, yeah. I mean, you don't have enemies shooting at you. You don't have to worry about, you know, which keystroke makes me jump over this, you know, bench or something like that. So I think it would be a good way to acclimate yourself to the mouse and keyboard.
I like that. I thought you were going to say, you know, if they want to get used to the mouse and keyboard, they should pick up Microsoft Word.
Good training.
That's a good start.
Home row.
No, I love the Portal one because it's true. There's no pressure at all. It's like, if you fail, no big deal. Just try it again.
Exactly. And you're playfully mocked when you screw up.
But. Yeah. Plus, yeah, in the end, it does get tough. So, I mean, if you can beat Portal 2, then you would be ready for the online arena. It's like that's your sensei.
All right, let's take one more. Great questions this week, guys. Keep sending them.
Yeah,
in.
They're fantastic. Yeah.
We will send you.
We love you.
We'll send you Logan.
No, we're sending them codes for GOG.com. They get a free game. So the first 10
and
questions
Logan.
We play.
And it's a free game of their choice.
Yeah,
right?
You can choose any
Which
game
is
on
awesome.
GOG.
Yeah. I recommend Beyond Good and Evil.
You may.
Wow, Josh, I'm going to pick up my phone and send you a question right now.
Wow, Evan, you're my best friend.
Hey, PC Gamer Podcast. This is Julian from Albany, New York. After 5 long years, I'm finally able to build myself a new PC. I just had a question about graphics drivers, not drivers, but graphics cards. Would you recommend I just go complete balls out and just buy one, like GeForce 580, or should I buy two kind of mid-range cards and put them on SLI? Let me know what you think. Bye.
Yeah, that's a... Oh. You know, just before I answer that, I can never go through a podcast without mentioning the military in some degree or fashion, so why break that habit?
Go for it.
I actually went to MEPS in Albany, New York, which is where you go before you go, like, off the basic training.
What's it mean?
MEPS, Military Enlistment Processing Center.
Sounds like meat.
Yeah. So, yeah. Anyway, so that's a good question, and that heavily depends upon what resolutions you play at. So if you want to play at high resolutions, such as 1920x1200, or 2560x1600, you're better off with a really powerful single card. But that said, two mid-range cards will probably cost about the same and get you very good performance, almost equal, sometimes more. It's very subjective. It depends on the game. It depends on what settings you want to set. So I would say if you can afford it, always go for the biggest, beefiest card first. If you want to save a little bit of money and you don't play on a 30-inch monitor, I would maybe go for the two mid-range cards in SLI. And I would say AMD and NVIDIA are probably about the same, Crossfire and SLI. They're very similar, again. So take your pick. I mean, SLI and Crossfire are now very much a reality, where before they were a little wonky. So it's kind of a convoluted answer of saying yes and yes. But, yeah.
There's a lot of options out there, really.
There are. But do keep in mind that if you go with the mid-range cards, you need to get the same card. Otherwise, you're going to be scaling down to the lower card speed. So don't get like a 6970 and then get like a 6950. That wouldn't do you much good.
How did they process you there?
Slowly.
Wow.
We left at like 4:30 in the morning. And that's your first like introduction to hurry up and wait. Where you just get there and you sit in the same spot for like an hour and
that's
do nothing.
That's why I didn't join the military.
Then you go and get your heartbeat checked, and you sit for another 2 hours. Then you get your hearing checked, then you sit for 3 hours. Yeah.
So many mind games, Chris.
Yeah.
No, it starts off, yeah, and... It was great. MAPS, yay.
Yay, military.
Let's transition to playlists. Let's keep it quick, gentlemen. Joshua, you've been playing Dragon Age. We know that.
Yes.
We know that. I didn't actually get what class you're playing as, though.
I'm playing Rogue. Yeah, I actually played through a bunch of them. I was pretty... Warrior seemed very boring, and Mage seemed too similar to the first one. Rogue was a good mix of new and very fun.
Great.
Yeah. I've also been playing League of Legends. They just launched a co-op versus AI, which it's a new AI. They had AI before, but it's terrible. So this is supposed to actually be very difficult. I did a pug group, just pickup group. We tore through them in 33 minutes. It's pretty one-sided. Yeah, I mean, they do a good job. They still ganked us. They moved across. Overall, it's really fun. There's no stress. It's trash talk. It seems like a really good place for people that are new to the game to jump in, which is what they really needed. It's a good place to jump in, learn the game. And, the other thing is Tor launched up a great new feature. I can't believe no MMO has done this before. Well, as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, yeah, duh, that's obvious. They let players start making guilds now. And so you can invite guilds. You can say, you know, we want to be PvE. We want to be PvP. We're going to be on the West Coast. We're going to be raiding these nights. Are you casual, hardcore, whatever? And then players can apply through the guild. There's built-in forums, all that sort of stuff. So we made our guild. We now have 250 members, which is halfway to the 500 member limit. We are by four. Yeah, we're an Empire guild, of course. We don't know its server yet, because what happens is in the final phase, right before they launch the game, all the guilds are going to be assigned a server based on your choices. So we'll be assigned a PvP server. And then all the players who registered for that will be told, hey, all your friends are on this server. If you want to join the guild, you know, join here. But yeah, so we're an Empire guild. The next largest guild has 70-something members. And so,
we'll crush them.
Yeah,
we'll
crush all of them. But first, we'll crush them by making them give in to their anger and, like, join us.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, it's not enough to kill them. We must steal them.
Yeah. To your anger.
Yes. And so, yeah, we already have someone who's RPing the droid, like Knights of the Old Republic, the HK-47.
Yeah.
So he's already in there like, query, what do you guys think is going to happen with this?
It's,
It begins.
Yeah.
And if his vent craps out, like Skype, he'll actually sound like a robot.
Yeah, yes. He will. Yeah, and so, and there's already people from Star Wars Galaxies, like veterans reuniting, oh my gosh, I played on this server, I played. And so it's really fun just seeing the community kind of build up around. So if you want to join, go to bit.ly /PCGTour. That's very simple. It'll take you right to our guild page. Apply. I will accept you.
First come, first serve. And
yeah, up to 500.
250.
Yeah.
And those are lowercase letters, actually, that matters in bit.ly, I think.
Oh,
right?
It is. It's actually all uppercase.
Okay.
Yeah,
isn't
sorry.
It's bit.ly, right?
Yeah, bit.ly /PCGTour, all uppercase.
Cool.
Yeah.
Thank you, Josh.
Join
Master
us
of the Empire.
Or be destroyed.
Chris Kowalski, what have you been playing?
Playing with hardware.
That counts. Well, yeah,
lots
of hardware. Is there any really exciting hardware you've been touching?
Yeah, but it's for our...
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. Tell us, which hardware are you touching, Chris?
I'm going to keep that secret for now because I want everyone to buy our upcoming hardware special when it releases, and you can see exactly what hardware we've been playing with and which pieces of hardware we will recommend by buying that on newsstands when it comes out soon. So in the next month or two, take a look. That's really all I can say. Sorry, I've been working a lot. Don't play.
That's fine.
I want to play Bulletstorm.
You are credit. You are a credit to our team.
I really want to play Gemini Rue too. That's like my next one. Really
right.
That looks really cool.
Logan.
Yeah, I've actually started playing Gemini Rue, and it's very, very engrossing. I very much enjoy it, but because I've been working a lot lately too, it's like for that kind of game, I like to sit there for hours, right? But I'm only getting 5 minutes here, 10 minutes there. So I kind of put it aside because I really want to be able to sink into it. So I've been playing Bulletstorm, which is just fine for, you know, your little...
That's a game where you can play it.
Yeah, just dropping in and all that. I've also been playing Into a Starfield Sky, or wait.
Starfield Sky.
Which is intriguing. It's
Jason Rohrer's game.
The guy who made Sleep Is Death.
Yeah,
it's a very interesting shooter. You have to experience it to kind of get it. It's a recursive shooter where you just keep going down through levels and up through levels, and it's just so. Somehow it reminds me of the greatest pinball game. Virtual pinball game I've ever played. It was on the, of all things, God forgive me, the Nokia N-Gage. And I can't even remember what it was called, but the thing about this pinball machine is you kept trying to get the ball up to the top of the screen and beyond it, and you would go to another pinball board. And there were like 500 of them. And you kept going up and up and up.
That's
and
awesome.
Then if you lost the ball between your flippers, all that would happen is you'd go back down to the next board. And so you kept, I mean, it was so addictive, and you kept playing and you kept trying to get the ball up and up and up, and you'd be at like board 300, and then you'd go back to 295, and it was just so, and that's the shooter feels that same way, but I'm still trying to get used to the controls, which are a little weird for me. And as you get older, the whole synapse thing, it doesn't rewire as quickly, you know,
So Bulletstorm, and but this weekend I was really hoping to see some daylight, but now I got to do Dragon Age 2. It's just got to happen. You know what I mean?
So it's going to happen.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Mr. Valva.
Let's see. This week I finished up Bulletstorm. I started Dragon Age 2, which was enjoyable. I'm kind of leaning towards Josh's opinion on this one, is that Origins was a bit better. But anyway, I'm still playing it. Played Dawn of War Retribution. But I got to tell you what, the one thing that's been sucking up all of my time recently, have you seen the new 156 Pokemon and Pokemon Black and White? I want to catch all those motherfuckers.
What is up with all of our interns liking Pokemon?
It is so true, though.
Activate the chlorine gas.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
It is so good. It is the best Pokemon game, and I am not ashamed to say that at all.
You will be.
That's like saying this is the best car accident I've ever witnessed. It's, you know, they're still bad.
It's like, you know, like how your parents dressed in the 60s and 70s, you know?
Although, I will say that they are making a Pokemon online trading card game for the PC. So
is this going to be the first non-Nintendo Pokemon game?
I have no idea.
Yes, it is.
Okay, so...
you tell me.
Anthony has been successfully shunned. I'm going to transition. No, love you, Anthony. Sorry. I've also been playing a little bit of Retribution. I'm level 15 with my Lord General in Last Stand. That's awesome. Playing it with Dan Stapleton, who's a good co-op companion. And let's see, Dragon Age 2 is my game right now. I'm hopefully going to play that just until I'm done. Get it out of the way. That's kind of a weird way of thinking about games.
Yeah, it's almost like you're talking about a breakup or something here with it.
That's kind of how we have to play a game. Like, I have to play Shogun next week. Like, we have to play what's
happening. Like, sorry, baby. You know?
Yeah.
There's more out there.
But we've also been having some really quality Arma sessions. Last weekday, we had a nice one over the weekend. Mm-hmm. We had some just excellent night raids and stuff like that.
Can I just bump in? I'd like to say, for people that don't know, me and Evan live in the same place with a fellow named Norm and one of our interns, Lucas, and I will often go upstairs. I live downstairs. And I'll hear just these random military acronyms come out of the bedroom, and it gives me a little slice of home. You know, it makes me feel comfortable, you know. Charlie Roger, dot Tango. It's great.
Do you ever dive under the desk, you know?
Some flashbacks, and I hear, like, you know, I'm still here. All right. Yeah, so. Kudos to Evan.
By the way, if your airplane gets shot up with bullets, you can use duct tape. Didn't you teach me that?
Speed tape, not duct tape.
Who keeps speed tape? What is speed tape?
That's military jargon for duct tape.
I'm sorry. I thought he was... Okay. So he
it's just silver. It's got like a metallic...
Why do you call it speed tape?
Because it's really fast to put on. You get the hell out of there.
Why don't you just call it duct tape?
Dude, this is the Air Force. Why do they call it a C-130?
Because they have special tape in the military for ducks.
It's kind of
right.
And you don't want to get it confused.
I mean, it's a military tradition when something so mundane is used over and over again for a variety of things. You have to exoticize it, basically, right?
Basically, yeah.
Yeah.
Someone probably got a strike for doing that. So
speed tape.
Awesome.
Speed tape.
Badass tape.
PC Gamer Podcast, educational military resource. That's always going to be the case, I hope. All right. Thanks again for your excellent questions this week, guys. Sorry we didn't get to play all.
They were fantastic.
Good stuff. Questions.
Yeah. We wanted to play some more our netbook battery die that we play the questions off of. But keep them coming. We will ply you with free games from GOG.com. And, of course, if you'd like to submit a question, it is 877-404-1337, extension 724 on the phone or email through PCGamerPodcast@gmail.com.
That was impressive. You just did all that.
Well, thanks so
much.
Also,
we're on Twitter, so go ahead and follow us there. We were spamming out our tour invites to be that way, so
if you could
get on that.
Please follow me. I'm so lonely.
Let's all our Twitter nicks. Mine's I'm at Logan @LoganDecker, all one word, LoganDecker.
I am Planet Valva, Planet VALVA.
This is Evan. I'm at Elahti, LAHTI.
This is Josh. I am J. Augustine, AUGUSTINE.
This is Chris. I'm the one with, like, the weird Air Force one. So I'm at Havoc06, HAVOC, the number 0, the number 6. Follow me. I have no one following me. Spam. Sad.
You know, if you tweet out a bunch of, like, names like iPad and Nintendo 3DS and things like that, you'll just get a bunch of more of those spam followers and feel better about yourself.
That's true. Maybe I should do that right after we're done. Yeah.
Just make one long post with a bunch of...
Yeah.
Anyway.
iPad, MS, Windows.
Our plotting continues. So if you want to subscribe to our magazine, of course, head over to PCGamer.com. Look for the panel on the right side. Fill out a little bit of information. We'll be glad to send you the best PC magazine, PC gaming magazine in the entire world. Thanks again for joining us this week for Josh Augustine, Chris Comiskey, Logan Decker, and Anthony Valva. I'm Evan Lottie. This has been PC Gamer Podcast number 263. See you next week.
Later.
Later, Gators. Bye.
I'm Josh Augustine with PC Gamer, here with Eskil Steenberg, the creator of Love, the MMO. So Eskil, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine.
Very cool.
I'm here in San Francisco. It's
yes,
pretty nice.
You are. So
the weather is a lot nicer than in Sweden, I can tell you.
Oh, what's it like over there?
When I left, it was kind of a snowstorm, which is really hard. You know, it's really hard to pack when you know you're going somewhere warm, but you won't survive to the airport unless you... bring a lot of clothes. So
yeah. Plus, you got to get back home once you get to the airport.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't actually have a ticket home, so that kind of works itself out. But
all right.
Yeah.
It's all right. Well, PC Gamer has the big jumbo jet. We can give you a lift back.
Oh,
you know?
Cool.
Yeah. And we have the Spy. I don't know if you read our column, The Spy.
I do.
Yeah.
I mean,
he has all sorts of stuff, and he's traveling the world constantly, so I'm sure he can drop you off.
Yeah. Something unfoldable. I want to fly home in something unfoldable.
Awesome. Yeah, we can get some sort of...
Or like a blow-up something, like a blow-up airplane or something like that. It'd be awesome.
All right. I'll see what we can do. We have all sorts of stuff in the...
I wonder what the pressure is like in a blow-up airplane.
Probably not very good.
Yeah. Well.
All right. So how's Love doing? Just kind of...
Love has been doing a lot better, actually. More players are coming in, and it's been really interesting. And I've done a whole bunch of developments. And what's been the main development, there's been lots and lots of small things and tweaks and fixes and things like that. But the thing that is probably the most exciting to me is that about 6 months ago, I started working on a new animation system, and I inserted that animation system and have inserted some new animation stuff. And that has sort of led to some new AI behavior. And AI behaviors are fun and all that, but what's really cool that makes me really excited about it is actually how the players have sort of completely changed when they deal with the AI. And I've sort of for a long time had this theory that you could make AI in some really some sort of simple ideas of how to make the AI more human and how to get players to sort of care about them and things like that. And when I started adding some things like that to the game, the players become incredibly friendly towards the AI. And I don't really stop the players from, you know, doing whatever they want. They can shoot all the AI if they want. They can go hog wild. And actually, if you kill AI, they usually drop something. So there's actually sort of a good reason to kill AI. But once the AI became a little bit more human, they sort of stopped, just started feeling for the AI. And I've had several players sort of say that, well, I don't really, you know, make a difference between players and AI because I kind of care for them equally as if they're humans.
Yeah.
And that's incredibly exciting to me. And I know I've sort of just scratched the surface. So right now I'm kind of in research mode. I'm like, what can I do with this? Because it's like a new world that is opened. And especially I really like the fact that it's not heavy-handed. You know, there's a lot of games like Hitman and things like that where you're sort of not supposed to kill civilians. And they add all these rules that you know get penalties or you get bad scores or things like that, and you know, to sort of discourage you from being violent. And here I have nothing like that, but still sort of people. I mean, people, if they accidentally kill an AI, they feel really bad about it, and I kind of really like that.
Yeah. So are you having like activists in there like? NPC rights, like, don't fight the NPCs.
What kind of? I mean, people start being a little bit mad, I guess, if other players start attacking the AI, and, you know, they start saying, no, we're trying to be friends with them. Don't do that.
Yeah.
That has a little bit changed, actually, because in the past, the AI was either completely neutral to you and they didn't really care about you, or they were attacking you. And now they have sort of a lot of layers to them, so they can be friendly with you, and they can hate you, and you know, they can be indifferent to you, they can be curious about you, and things like that. And lots more of that is obviously coming. But what also changed is that in the past, since the problem is that it's a multiplayer game, right? So you have this problem is, like, what if one player, you know, starts becoming like Rambo and steals stuff from the AI and becomes really mean? Does that mean that the AI starts hating the players, all the players? Well, that's kind of an opening for a lot of griefing. And that's kind of how it worked before. And that meant that when the AI attacked, it was really hard for the players to figure out, why are they hating us? And now it's more personal. It's more individual. They actually remember who they dislike, and that's who they attack. And then there are some new mechanics. Like, there is this thing called a super token, which basically means that every race has their own holiest of holy thing. And as long as you don't steal that, they'll mostly leave you alone. But if you steal this thing, it becomes really obvious that you've stolen this thing, and you know, another player can basically decide, I'm gonna, you know, give it back to them because I don't want to fight.
Yeah.
So that makes it a lot more clear, and also these sort of MacGuffins can be stolen by other AI. So an AI can basically come to you and be like, help me find, you know, get my stuff back from this other race. They're mean to me. Help us. So there's a lot of sort of interesting things that are coming out of that, and it's still really, really early, really rough, but I'm very, very excited about it. So,
yeah, the thing I love about kind of your development style is it feels like you're almost playing with the game. Like, I feel like the game kind of reflects your personality, too, in this way. Like, you're like, hey, I wonder what would happen if this, and so you create it and throw it out there and just kind of see what happens, and then lets players play around with it, but you're kind of playing it from a big picture perspective.
Oh yeah, I mean, in my view, I have this great canvas now. I have, you know, a world, I have 3D engines, I have players, I have all these interesting things, and I can just throw in anything I want. I can just try stuff out, and I think there are some specific things that I'm mad about games that I want to fix, and I think there are some problems that we're not sort of tackling in game development.
Do tell.
Well, I had this horrible feeling a while back, which basically was that I thought about 15, 20 years ago, if we looked at gaming back then, it was very crude and it was ugly, and you know, maybe Doom had come out or whatever, you know, maybe even earlier, or with 2D games. And back then people were like, well, these games are all shooters. That's like really mature and it's really stupid, but you know, we can't really do much more. It's very technically limited, and sure, it's only kind of boys playing with us because it's kind of immature, but you know, someday, you know, in 20 years we'll have these games that will be like about emotions and love, and we'll have these really complex emotional relationships, and we'll have Casablanca, the game, right?
Yeah.
Where you feel for these characters, and it's really sort of interesting, and you can do whatever you want. It'll be really open and flexible and all that stuff, and it'll be amazing, right? And then we'll get, you know, all the other players, you know, all the housewives, and you know, all the big critics of movies will be like, oh, this is awesome because it's like the same, but it's all free and cool. And then you sort of look at where we are today, and yeah, it's like
housewives are playing Farmville.
Yeah, which is like kind of, you know, it's the same game we played, you know, 20 years ago, except dumped down and actually less features, and you know, a new veneer on it instead of, you know, killing things. It's like, you know, I don't know, clicking on your cornfield or whatever.
Yeah.
And I feel really like we've sort of, I think honestly, if you would have seen a game like, you know, Crysis or Crysis 2 20 years ago, we would have been like awed of the graphics. But I think we would have sort of expected that. We would have expected to have really awesome graphics. But I think that if we saw, you know, Guitar Hero, we would be thoroughly disappointed. You know, it's like, okay, so 20 years and we're pressing colored buttons. That's really it, you know.
Yeah.
Where did all the technology go? Where's the development, you know?
Yeah. So you're thinking that just because games are prettier and kind of have new technology, maybe we aren't using the technology to its full potential.
Well, I think we're developing in a certain direction, right? We're becoming very good at doing better games that are of the same type that we did back then. Sometimes not even better. I mean, if you look at a lot of games today, they are very simple in their mechanics. I mean, Gears of War has a lot less mechanics than a game like Legend of Zelda. Even though Legend of Zelda is 25 years old, you know, it had open world destructibility, it had all these, you know, tools, it had, you know, a lot of stuff in it. And that was, you know, pretty complex in terms of mechanics. But we don't really, you know, that's one direction. And I'm thinking that we're still sort of very immature when it comes to making, you know, characters and stories and not just, you know, telling stories, because when we're telling stories, we're really just stealing from other media, right?
Yeah.
A told story is something that you could do, in my opinion, a lot better in a movie. If I have a great story in a game, I'm like, damn, why do I have to play this video game? Can I just go to the movies and see the, you know, proper lighting and, you know, all the niceties you get with cinema? That would be a lot better, right? So it's kind of the interaction. We haven't sort of gone further because I think we've sort of locked ourselves into what a game is.
Yeah. Are there any games out there that you think are a good example of kind of the direction you want to see it take? Like, how do you feel about kind of like Dragon Age or kind of... That was fairly open world where your choices matter,
yeah,
to the story.
You have that, but it's to me, it's sort of a very advanced version of a choose-your-own-adventure book. Yeah. It has a lot more, you know, choices in it, and they added on top of that this whole, you know, RPG mechanic where you can collect stuff. So, you know, you basically make a bunch of decisions on what powers you're going to have and all that stuff. But it's still sort of a... it's very much like a bunch of quests with story being told to you. And actually, the games that I think are the closest are things like Ico, where you have, you know, a character you don't care for and you pretty much hate in the beginning, and then you sort of learn to love her through your actions and what happens in the world, and later on when you lose her, it's like this huge loss that you, you know, and that works on an emotional level rather than a sort of plot level. So I think there's definitely a gap here, and I'm a little bit sad because I don't think there are very many people working on it. And what I'm also a bit afraid of is that a lot of the development we're doing is kind of, well, some of the technical development is the kind of development we can actually build off of, right? If you come up with a really smart algorithm for doing, you know, lens flares or whatever, you can use that in the future and you can say, wow, we now sort of advanced the graphics capabilities of our games. But a lot of games today feel like they are very much sort of one-offs. They are, I mean, first of all, the cost of making games is insane. And the insane part is usually sort of the one-off stuff. It's drawing all the graphics that you're going to see when you run through the game once, and that's kind of it. So, you know, if you make a sequel to a game, you kind of always have to start over because it's kind of the content that you buy. So that makes it really expensive. But then, you know, you can look at a lot of sort of the quote-unquote innovation that goes on in video games. You know, people look at the indie scene and you know, iPad and iPhone and things like that. And they're full of, like, fun ideas, but they're kind of like... it's like comparing, like, YouTube clips to Apocalypse Now, you know?
Yeah.
Apocalypse Now is this awesome big thing that has this deep meaning, and that YouTube clip of the dude falling over, that's kind of the thing you send around your office and you laugh about for 10 minutes, and then you sort of move on, you know, and it's funny and it's, you know, it's compelling or
but
something.
But it's throwaway.
Like, it's very throwaway, and it's not like, you know, well, now we've made 10,000 YouTube clips, so now we know how to make the ultimate YouTube clip with, you know, that is going to take all the knowledge from all the stupid things on YouTube and make the awesomest thing ever. You know, Because, you know, all those things are kind of throwaway because we've seen them, so we would move away from them. So I think we're a little bit stuck. That's a problem. And I would say the main problem, in my opinion, is that we're too successful right now. When you look at games like Farmville, they're incredibly simple. And they're incredibly stupid, and they tickle a certain part of our brain, which is that sort of collectathon brain part, which is, you know, the same as Diablo and, you know, a bunch of, I mean, Diablo is kind of the mother of those games, but it's creeping up everywhere right now. I mean, you can't even make an Xbox game without having it because you're forced by Microsoft to have achievements, and that's kind of, you know, that, you know, collect-a-thon thing, and we're learning to become very good at that. We're becoming awesome at making collect-a-thons that sort of scratch that itch. Mm-hmm. And the question is that all game art, you know? And what kind of behaviors do that lead to, right? If you tell people to do that, you're basically teaching people to be greedy. Games are about greed right now. And so let's say you're trying to make a game like I'm trying to make a game about, you know, relationships and doing things together and community and sort of the events of community. You have to step away from that. You can't make a collect-a-thon. You can't make, like, I have the coolest character, because that completely is against the other thing. The problem, of course, is I'm competing with all the Farmvilles out there, right? So actually, you know, if the Farmvilles weren't as successful, a lot of companies wouldn't say, well, why are we making like an advanced game? We have no idea if it's going to work out when we can make like a simple game like Farmville and get, you know, 70 million players. That's awesome. Let's do that. You know, that looks cheap, you know. So I think sort of gaming has that problem right now. And I don't really know, you know, I hope that somebody's going to do something awesome that we're all going to be like, holy this is what we should do.
Yeah. Is that what it's going to take to change it? Is does someone make a different type of game that is also commercially successful?
I think so. I don't think it has to be that commercially successful.
What about Minecraft? I mean, is that a good example?
I haven't played it enough to say that. Yeah. I mean, it is obviously, you know, it does tickle a lot of those itches. So it is definitely in that realm. And I think there's something else out there that are sort of, I don't know, out there.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm looking for it, but I'm not expecting, like, I'm expecting myself to find sort of clues to it, but I'm not really expecting myself to find sort of the mother load.
Yeah. Are you planning to make the mother load? Kind of find clues and build it yourself?
I mean, I'm obviously I'm trying, right? Yeah. Love is that attempt. It is a big, huge sort of research project into finding out if that's possible. Mm-hmm. Now, I've learned a whole bunch of stuff that I didn't know before. I've learned that players are actually super nice to each other if you let them. That the fact that people call each other online is not, it's not just who people are. It's a matter of the environment. Like, people do terrible things to each other online because certain, you know, they don't do it in real life. So there's got to be a difference, right? And the difference is that, you know, they can get away with it, but it's also that it's kind of that competitive, you know, I'm better than you environment. So people sort of go to their lowest of low. And actually, if you sort of build something that doesn't go with to that, you're going to get a lot nicer players. So that's a discovery. Other discoveries that I, you know, come back to is that I would say the main problem with my game is that it's a multiplayer game, and that affords you a lot of good stuff. You know, multiplayer is awesome, but it also means that it's really hard to create cohesive events because people might be on the other side of the world not paying attention. One player may do something that influences another player, so the other player will then probably think of it as completely random because they don't see the cause and effect. And that's an incredibly tricky thing to deal with, and actually something I'm working on right now, sort of trying to figure out how can I have more sort of world events where everybody's sort of, oh my God, this thing just happened, you know, and everybody's sort of on the same page. Oh, we got to go deal with that, you know. So there's definitely sort of opportunities and problems that have arisen from the work, and I'm obviously learning as I'm going along.
Very cool. Well, I know I'm definitely excited to see what you're doing with Love, and I know you're working on other projects you can't talk about right now. So I'm excited to see how you try and move in this direction yourself going forward. Thank you very much for taking the time with us today.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me.
Yeah, always a pleasure. And if you want to tell the guys listening where they can go check out Love.
Yeah, you can go to kelsolar.com. That's kelsolar.com. Or actually, I think if you just search for Love on Google, nothing more than Love, I think I'm usually on the first page.
Oh,
maybe
nice.
Like
that's
really
impressive.
High on the second.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope you get some people like looking there for like try and find matches and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. Lots of those.
Awesome. Well, great. So, yeah, so definitely check that out. We talked about it on the podcast probably about a month ago, but you lowered the price down. So what is it now?
It's 10 euros, and then you get to play for 180 days.
Yeah.
So that's almost 6 months you can play.
Yeah, that's incredible. And there's no initial cost.
There's no initial cost. You can download the client for free to test it out. And if you absolutely don't want to pay but want to try it out, go into the TeamSpeak channel, and there'll be lots of people there who you can talk to. And for every account that somebody pays, they also get a friend account, which means they can invite another player to play while they're playing. So that's how you can play for free. So all you need to find is somebody who's already playing, and you can try it out.
Nice. Yeah, so please, highly recommend you go do that, everybody listening. And, yeah, thank you again, Eskil.
Thank you very much.